of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And today our guest is going to be Bill Sardi, and we're going to talk about health and health issues. But I'd ask Bill to come on, especially today, because of a couple articles that have come out recently, in the paper. One of them was that the Centers for Disease Control, that organization, which, of course, is responsible for protecting us from infectious disease, 26 years into an epidemic, the AIDS epidemic, has suddenly decided that maybe we should have routine HIV testing on every office examination. We should try to identify who has this terrible disease that has already killed over 500,000 Americans and another million are infected, perhaps many more than that, just here in the United States, killed 30 million throughout the world, another 50, 60 million infected. We don't know because we're not doing too good a job of trying to track the disease. Oh, there are in a few places in Botswana, 46% of pregnant women are HIV infected, and that's either a failed public health policy or a very successful genocidal policy. But here in the United States, 26 years into the epidemic, the Centers for Disease Control is suddenly coming out and saying, gee, maybe we ought to start doing routine testing. And I can remember 17 years ago standing on the floor of the House of Delegates here in California advocating that standard public health policy and being attacked by people from the Centers for Disease Control and public health officers. And see, how come they're getting so smart today? And then recently, of course, the World Health Organization has come out and favored beginning to use DDT in Africa to control the unnecessary malaria epidemic, which we'd pretty well destroyed before we banned DDT. And about 100 million people have died in Africa, just Africa alone, because we banned DDT back in 1992 without any scientific basis at all. And most of what the American people have been told about the dangers of DDT just are not true. And then, of course, there's been an attack on vitamins recently. And of course, there are just so many things that are happening that are influencing our health. And the average individual really doesn't know who to believe or where to get information. And so let me suggest you go to Bill Sardi's website, askbillsardi.com or knowledgeofhealth.com. Bill, thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
You bet. Of course, all of these things are historically unprecedented when we see the Centers for Disease Control. It's just about taking off in an airplane and having it do a giant U-turn in the sky and land back on the airport tarmac. I mean, what is this about? They've taken all this time. Now, understand, we have ineffective vaccines that do not work for the flu, and yet we have this massive campaign to vaccinate every child, infant, every senior, everybody with an ineffective flu vaccine. Why, as soon as we get anywhere close to any kind of a vaccine for a childhood disease, why, they all have to be mandated and vaccinated. And, of course, now we see this terrible tragedy of too much mercury and other contaminants and so on in these very, very young children who have, of course, small bodies and don't have the defenses to defend against the side effects of these vaccines. But what we're trying to point out is that they have these giant policies to screen everyone for mammograms for cancer and a colon cancer test, and the list goes on and on and on, and nothing for HIV. And now, well, all these years later, they say it's time to do something.
We're going to be back in just a moment here with Bill Sardi. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardi, and we're going to be talking, about some of the things that are happening today. Recently, there was a report published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that pointed out that men, Americans, the age, I think, 54 to 65, 4,000 Americans, compared with 4,000 Englishmen age 54 to 65, we had twice as much diabetes, half again as much strokes and heart attack and cancer. The Americans, compared with comparable Englishmen, of the same race, actually, and certainly the same amount of smoking, and actually the Englishmen drink a great deal more than the Americans do, and yet we're much sicker than the Englishmen, and the people who've done this study and the people in our government say, oh, shucks, we can't just figure out why this is, why Americans are so ill. Why are we much more ill than our counterparts over in Great Britain? And it should be pretty obvious. It's just they're not going to tell us why. So you pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, they're blaming it on obesity, that we're a little chubbier, but there's more to this. I mean, the British are at a northern latitude. They certainly don't get the vitamin D that a great many Americans do living in the southern part of the United States. So these statistics should go the other way. In Britain, they're yelling and complaining and stamping their feet that they don't get enough doctoring. There are long waiting lists. You've got to wonder whether doctoring is part of this, because the striking part of all this was the prevalence of diabetes and cancer was double, nearly twice as high among white Americans 55 to 64 years old as the British in the same age group. I mean, that's double. This isn't a small rise. We're not talking 10%, 20%. We're talking about a huge difference in that middle-aged group. And, of course, in males, we're always looking at iron overload and issues like this, but the British eat quite a bit of meat, and this is where you get a great deal of your iron from beef and so on. So it'd be difficult to say here all the factors involved, except it's embarrassing. The British are complaining that there's long waiting lists, they don't get enough medical care, and yet here is this tremendous difference. And it's striking, and understand, this is just between the Americans and the British. Then the French have always been compared against the British and are far healthier, and of course have an odd diet because they have lots of calories and fats and dairy, bread, all kinds of things. And, of course, they have that striking paradox because their red wine seems to be involved here. But
hold that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardi. We were talking about a recent study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it was published on the May of 03rd, I think it is, May 8th, 2006, somewhere in there. Anyway, and certainly in early May of this year. And it pointed out that Americans age 55 to 64, compared with a comparable group in Great Britain, age 55 to 64, 4,000 in each group, the English were far healthier than we are. We have twice as much diabetes and cancer, and certainly half again as much heart disease and certainly stroke. So the question is why, and then Bill was simply saying that then if you compare the English to the French, and the French have a terrible diet, a lot of fats, a lot of things that we're told we shouldn't eat, but of course they drink a lot of red wine. The French are a lot healthier than the English. So why is it the French are healthier than the English, and the English are a lot healthier than America? And why do we have so much disease in America, unnecessary disease? Is there some other factor here that they're not telling us about? All the experts say we have no idea. Well, if you listen to Radio Liberty, you listen to Bill Sardi, you'd have a very good idea why this is happening. I suspect they just don't want the American people to realize that we are under attack and our health is under attack today. Go ahead, Bill.
We have to ask ourselves, what about this cholesterol campaign? It seems to be prevalent in America. So you know the statistics, the way they gave them in this British study. 10% 15% of middle-aged Americans, males, suffered from heart disease compared to just 10% of the British. Now, that's a difference between 10 and 15%. So percentage-wise, that's about a 33% difference. Diabetes affected 12.5% of Americans, but only 7% of the British. Now, that's almost a double the risk for diabetes. And then cancer was the biggest striking one, 9.5% of these middle-aged Americans compared to just 5.4% of the British males. So that's almost a doubling of cancer. And, of course, that's a mortal thing there. so much cancer being detected when it's too late, and then you just have treatment but really no cure and no prolonged survival there. So this is the striking part of this whole thing. You're cutting off millions of American males from productive life or even life itself at the prime of their life, 55 to 64. So you've got a real problem here that there isn't some immediate pursuit as to why makes us wonder, because we have Centers for Disease Control, we have the Center for Health Statistics. They have all of this data that we don't always get to see, and I have reported about things that are strange in the mortality rate in the United States. For instance, the tremendous decline in the mortality rate right after Linus Pauling wrote a book about vitamin C, and then, of course, it was never reported by public health authorities. So, and, of course, the giant rise in mortality rates that was never reported and hidden when a flu epidemic occurred in 1992-93. It didn't fit their normal cycle of flu epidemics, and it was really a normal flu season, but more deaths. And of course, it occurred mostly to seniors in nursing homes, and they didn't report this. It isn't included as part of the Spanish flu, the Hong Kong flu, and so on, the ones that they normally report. Why have they kept this from the public view? And then, of course, just in the last few months, they did report a tremendous decline, 50,000 lives decline in the death rate in the United States for the end of 2004. And, of course, they didn't give us a reason, but we could track it back to the recall of Vioxx and these COX-2 inhibiting drugs. We know they were taken off the market at about the same time, and it was a decline in just the cardiovascular mortality, where no treatments that were new were implemented or anything, and we know it didn't even have to do with cholesterol, so it might have had, and most likely had to do with the withdrawal of the Vioxx from the marketplace. Again, they're hiding this from us, and of course we have to ask ourselves, when we see such someone should be resigning here, when we hear DDT, I think every child in America has come to think of DDT as something terrible. And now we find out it could have saved millions and millions of lives, especially in the third world. Dr. Montes has talked about various people actually taking spoonfuls of this and swallowing it to show you it's non-toxic. And now this is what they find. Even the Wall Street Journal has come out and said we could use DDT effective. It's used properly, just like we use everything around our household. Use it properly. Doesn't matter whether it's bug repellents or we use chlorine in water because we want to detoxify water, make it antiseptic. And so chlorine, a very toxic molecule, but just a little tiny bit, and then we don't have the dysentery and cholera and typhoid that occurs from dirty water. So the trade-off is worth it, and we don't like chlorine long-term. It does cause some problems in our bladder and kidneys, and we get an increased risk of kidney cancer and bladder cancer. But none of us would be around if cholera, typhoid, and dysentery were common as they were before the era of chlorinating water at the early 1900s. So We know that we could have used safely, we could have used DDT, and of course we could see it here in Africa, but it seems like a pointed effort to keep the Africans from using it, because this is where the problems still remain, the malaria there in those tropical climates. And of course you've got to wonder if it wasn't intentionally withheld, and why did they let certain environmentalists sway everyone away from this when the scientific arguments weren't strong. And it's always a question of a toxicity, a dosage, and then, of course, the side effects. And, of course, you know, we're talking about DDT. Okay, it may not be something that we want to give to people in large doses, but the point was is the benefits always outranked any of the risks, and yet they wouldn't allow this. So we're allowed millions to die here. In one continent, it almost sounds racial. These are questions that will arise, and I assume that they should arise.
Let me just point out that if you read the paper today and read the articles, they'll tell you a million people die of malaria every year. Now, the figure is really 3 million people die of malaria every year. And you go back, of course, I was looking into this when I was involved with the AIDS epidemic, and everybody acknowledged 15 years ago, 3 million people die every year of malaria. So they've simply juggled the books to make it appear that so many people aren't dying, but they still say, isn't it terrible? Now, you can go up on the Internet. If you can Google in 3 million people die of malaria, then you'll find the references to that to verify what I'm saying. I think there's one I got yesterday, 2.7 million people die every year from malaria. There's a lot of difference between 2.7 million and 1 million. What this really means is since 1972, when we banned... Yeah, we outlawed the use of DDT in the United States, and certainly did everything we could to ban it throughout the rest of the world. About 100 million people, 50 million of them children, about 100 million people, of human beings, have lost their lives because of a policy that was based not on science at all, but on an effort to actually kill off a large part of the population. And you go back and read the things that I cite in my population control agenda monograph, and we quote people who are saying, look, we didn't outlaw DDT because it wasn't working, because it was dangerous. It was doing too good a job. There are too many people in the world. We outlawed DDT because it was saving so many lives. And when you understand that, then maybe as we begin to see the difference between morbidity and mortality rates in Great Britain and the United States, maybe, just maybe, we're getting, of course, some of the same treatment right here. And when you see almost a double the incidence of diabetes and cancer in American males compared with British males, and you have to ask yourself why and what else aren't they trying us? Go ahead. Or what aren't they telling us? Go ahead, Bill.
Well, the watch dial, the sundial that they're looking at, the main big clock that they're looking at, the barometer, the gas gauge that they're looking at, is the world population size. This is what the elites are looking at. And this apparently goes back quite a ways in time. We think maybe efforts to control population, we look at them, they even debated whether they were really going to allow penicillin to be used because it was going to increase the population so much. But it's hard for us to, difficult for us to see that this is what is on their mind. Now understand, in the year 1800, there were about 980 million people in the world. There are now 1.5 billion in one country alone, China. And so this giant increase, until the year 1900, there were about 1.65 billion people in the world, which is about the current population of China alone. Now, this is what they have their mind on, and of course they have their mind on this idea of Malthus, that there would be a exponential growth in population. What we've actually seen is that birth rates have gone down. In Italy, they're actually paying young women to have babies, and of course, as we see in Western Europe, North America and Japan, why the birth rates are going down. And this has to do with social forces. Economic stability and women having fewer babies, of course, is the big issue. And of course, we see in the undeveloped countries why we're going to see the population of the world rise from its current 6 billion to 9 billion and by the year 2050. And of course, we see that mostly in the third world countries where economies are poor. Now, where if we can increase the economies of these countries, there seems to be some sort of an effort. The World Bank has been criticized for keeping these countries impoverished, and then of course, we see the high birth rates continue, and then maybe efforts to control populations. We'll get at that as we come back here with this whole story.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Bill Sadi as we begin to explore this whole idea of how are they getting the birth rate down. Is it simply because countries are industrializing, or is it that sometimes industrializing societies, they begin to give us medicines and fluoridate the water? And we'll be right back. Well, Bill, go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, certainly what we see, the world certainly got its first billion people by the year 1800. Another 130 years later, and we by 1930, we had another billion. Then it only took us 30 years to 1960, and then we had another third billion. And, of course, understood it was it was these improvements in health. Understand, at the beginning of the 1900s, we were cleaning water. We made for the Pure Food and Drug Act. We started fortifying foods with vitamins and so on. We started to not to have a regular food supply without famines, and even with all the world wars and everything. And all of that destruction of life, certainly World War One was huge, why we see the population of the world still going up. By 1974, it only took us 14 more years, from 1960 to 74, for another billion, and then another 13 years for the next billion, and by 1998, we had the 6 billion people on the planet. That only took 11 years to add that final one, and now they're thinking we'll reach 7 billion by the year 2009, and of course this increase goes on about every 11, 12, 15 years or so. We're going to see this increase.
But of course, many people think that with the falling rates in third world countries and certainly in first world countries, that we may go up to 8 billion or so, and then we may begin to drop. That's the that is at least the projections of certain people.
Well, we do see some of this. I mean, eventually by the year 2093, they're suggesting it would take 39 years to add another billion. Now, the concerns about overpopulation, I mean, there have been books written. I have one of them here. I did go investigate this. And then a number of studies, it's hard to pin down who's right, but studies show that the Earth could handle anywhere from 30-some billion people, even up to 100 billion people. Without any question, there'd be enough water and so on. Now, ain't no sinful man misusing God's natural resources, why we can never tell, but contamination and other things, as we see in the rivers in China and elsewhere. But what we're looking at is, did they selectively pick like an African continent where there might be a racial thing? Was AIDS brought there? The book The River, you might want to investigate. That's a thick book, but it's trying to show you about HIV emanating from nearby all of the certainly the vaccination stations there. And so on. So you get into questions about this, but where I'm headed today, because we have brought this all up as a theme, whether it's American males not being as healthy, or you know, DDT not being used to properly for malaria, and the miscalculation there, and nobody seems to be responsible for this. Somebody should really have a difficult time going to bed at night over these terrible health mistakes in the public health arena. But what I'm bringing up is how would you go about covertly decreasing fertility in human populations without their knowledge and with their complicity? Now, would you do that in what way? And the three things I'm going to bring up here would be to fluoridate water, of course, get them to believe that their teeth would be stronger and better, and there is some truth to that. But it might be really a different agenda, is that's to lower the fertility. And then, of course, the giant, massive effort to reduce cholesterol in the last 34 years.
Oh, hold that thought. Right, that will be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill Sardi was just talking about, of course, why, you know, we're seeing so much infertility in our society today. We never used to see all the infertility clinics. We do see an awful lot of couples that just can't conceive. And Bill was saying, could it possibly be that they're actually fomenting and creating infertility? And, of course, mentioning water fluoridation, which is known to decrease fertility. And then, of course, some of the other things that we know will increase fertility. So you pick up the story there, talking about the statin drugs and their impact on fertility, because they lower the cholesterol, and of course your sex hormones come from cholesterol. Pick up the story, Bill.
Well, certainly, the sex hormones, you're talking about a pathway in the body where you eat fat, that you get cholesterol production in the liver, and that is necessary for the production of testosterone and estrogen. So an effort to lower the cholesterol levels, a giant campaign like this, certainly could have been actually have an entirely different agenda. And when you finally look back and see that in 1987, the first cholesterol-lowering drug, Mevacor, came into use without any evidence that it lowered mortality. And by the way, this was justified And they knew it wasn't, it was right out in the open that it wasn't enough to lower the mortality rates. It did, in a small way, lower the heart attack rate. Yet we still see over a million heart attacks a year. Isn't that interesting that we see whatever it is, I mean, I think it's 25 million Americans taking cholesterol-lowering drugs, and we do not see a reduction in the number of heart attacks. The number's about the same. Are we that dumb to keep taking these pills when we don't see a real reduction in mortality rates? In fact, cholesterol does not even explain a half a million of the heart attacks whatsoever. These people just drop dead with normal to low cholesterol, and yet we blindly continue accepting this propaganda about cholesterol. Was there a different agenda here? And that's the big question. Is this what they went about doing? And you can see this. Now there's some studies here. Here's the Journal of Pharmacological Research, August 2004. I'm trying to cite it for you so you don't think we're into some sort of sensationalism. And they're talking about the sperm quality having to do with the cholesterol. And, of course, this kind of goes on into other reports, Toxicological Sciences, December 2005, and is talking about steroid outcomes in male and female rats. And, of course, steroid is meaning they're talking about cholesterol. So, and we're looking at this and trying to understand how this works. And there's a very revealing paper, I just sent it to your email, in the Journal of Assisted Reproduction and Genetics. This is the volume 21 of December 2004. And what they're talking about is the intracellular concentration of cholesterol in the sperm. It dictates the quality of the sperm, its mitochondrial function, that is, its ability to have energy to swim. And if it has no swimming ability, well, obviously, you will not have conception. And it's going on and trying to analyze males who are infertile and unable to conceive. And, of course, this goes on into tracking it down. And, of course, that supports the theory that the lack of cholesterol is the very thing that is involved here and demonstrates that, of course, this is a major factor involved in healthy sperm. So this has been known for some time. I'm just giving you a more recent report. The reports go back much earlier than this, but, of course, it was rather obvious. It's been always known for decades now that cholesterol had something to do with our hormone levels, and of course, hormone levels have something to do with not only sex drive, but ability to conceive, fertility and virility, and of course, they're looking at it here in this paper that I'm examining in relationship to the sperm quality, and of course, this is very important for us to understand. They know these things, and of course, they study these things, and of course, you're looking at a massive effort to lower cholesterol. And, of course, it would have been totally inappropriate in young females who, of course, would want to conceive, in young males who wanted to reproduce offspring. And yet we were telling them, too, not middle-agers, where the cholesterol does tend to rise, but in middle age, after age 40, this is a massive effort by the body to keep us able to reproductive capability in our middle age as our sex hormones begin to decline. So that's all it is. It's a natural thing.
And of course, what we see, so many men are having erectile dysfunction. So many couples are infertile. Is this simply happening by accident? Or is there a plan? We know, for instance, that if you fluoridate the water in the areas where the water is fluoridated, why the sperm count drops dramatically. And yet they tell us, oh, it's all about the children's teeth. And of course, certainly water fluoridation is safe and effective. You know, there's nothing to worry about. You can trust us because we're from the government. Why, we wouldn't lie to you, would we? And I would like to suggest they know exactly what they're doing. They don't want you to know. The major thrust of our policy is population control. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Bill Sardi. And you know, there's been so much new material coming up on population control since I wrote my thesis on this back in the late 1990s. And certainly, I think some of the material Bill Sardi's come up with of the effect of the statin drugs and the cholesterol-lowering effect to getting the cholesterol down to ridiculous and dangerous levels. But of course, one thing it does, it decreases the sterols, and it decreases the hormone levels, and then we wonder why so many men are having sex problems when so many women can't conceive. And pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, when we look at this data, and it's striking because it's available, and yet there's no comment about it. So here's the Journal of Toxicological Environmental Health, 1994, their May issue, and of course they're talking the title of the paper, Exposure to High Fluoride Concentrations in Drinking Water is Associated with Decreased Birth Rates. And then they go on. This is a human study, and they go on looking at all the counties across the United States, and they're showing where the fluoride is affecting the, of course, the birth rate and so on. And they have statistical analysis. This is valid at the 0.0002 level. This is a far greater than chance that all this would be related to fluoride, certainly not by chance occasion. And so this is the kind of thing that they're looking at, and they're seeing that this is, we know that there's what we call fluorosis now. That is, you can see it. Many communities may have a little bit of extra fluoride in their natural water. You see this in Michigan and so on. You see the modeling of teeth. You see the different coloration instead of nice white teeth and so on. And, of course, we see this kind of a thing where they actually have fluorosis by adding too much fluoride to the water. And oftentimes the public health authorities can't accurately do this, so the children actually have a modeling of their teeth. You can't get it down at the small little levels they're trying to do to harden our teeth. I think possibly the fluoride applications in the dental office may have some benefit, but not this adding it to the water supply where it might interfere with the mineralization of our bones and so on. It's not just being applied to teeth. It's going out throughout the skeleton. And here's a wonderful report in 1996 in the Journal of Toxicology, Clinical Toxicology, and it's going on and saying that in healthy males consuming water less than one part per million of fluoride, that they were having issues dealing with their testosterone.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Bill is saying that even at very minimal, very low levels of fluoride in the water, that men were, of course, getting a lower testosterone rate. Men were getting lower sperm counts. They know this. They know the water fluoridation lowers the male testosterone. It lowers the sperm count, and of course, much of that we actually have the scientific studies in the syllabus we have here called The Hidden Agenda. It's the story of water fluoridation. You'll see the abstracts of the scientific studies from the Journal of Fluoride, a journal which is never quoted by the American Medical Association. I wonder why. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, take heart. It's all reversible. And the International Journal of Fertility and Menopausal Studies, 1994, in their November-December issue, give us encouragement by saying the effects of fluoride on male sperm structure and metabolism, as shown in animal studies, are transient and reversible. I'll breathe a sigh of relief. Wait a minute, they didn't tell us how they made them transient and reversible. Why, they added vitamin C to the water supply of the animals. And there's a key fertile part of investigation that we then took a turn, started to examine, of course, exactly what do nutrients like vitamins and minerals have to do with our fertility. And what we see are tremendous, wonderful studies showing that antioxidants like vitamin E, vitamin C, are essential oils like omega-3 oils and fish oil, flaxseed, increase male and female fertility and virility tremendously, overcoming many of the toxins in our world, overcoming the effects of fluoride, overcoming the effects of even low cholesterol, and of course are able to do this now in the Biology of Reproduction Journal, Volume 52, 1995. I sent this report to you in the past week, Dr. Monteith, and it goes on to explain the key important roles of vitamin C in fertility. It has at least three roles, which is, of course, to make collagen. And, of course, you need a collagen wrapping around small little babies in the womb and for all this to occur, or you're going to lose the pregnancy. You need the formation of steroids and hormones, which is exactly what this is. You need vitamin C to accomplish this. And, of course, you need to prevent the oxidation of certain or destruction of certain molecules in order to conceive. And, of course, this is exactly what vitamin C does. It goes on in this paper to explain how critical vitamin C is in all of this and how early the studies were on this, and showing they did this in animals, bulls, and others, and they gave them extra vitamin C. These are animals who produce their own vitamin C. Humans do not, and they were still able to produce these effects and show that even extra added to all this. And goes on to explain that vitamin C supplementation enhances the ovulation-inducing effects of certain drugs that they use to help women become fertile. So they're not even using the vitamins when they could be, and suggest that dietary supplementation during pregnancy may reduce the effects of birth defects, frequency of birth defects, and a daily supplement of 500 milligrams would be suggested. Well, we don't see this. What we see is a massive effort to limit the amount of vitamins. And, of course, the National Institutes of Health this last week coming out with a ludicrous report saying that, that vitamin supplements are not safe and so on, and there's not enough data. And, of course, this was absolutely ludicrous. The vitamin supplements are so safe. They're safer than food itself because we have food poisoning. We have safer than table salt, which raises your blood pressure, and, of course, safer than even an aspirin tablet, which kills thousands of people due to bleeding ulcers every year. What we do see is an effort to try and discourage people from taking vitamin supplements, and we have to wonder why. And what we see here is, here's a wonderful report out of the West African Medical Journal of last year, and it says plasma semen levels related to ascorbic acid. And, of course, what they're talking about here, ascorbic acid being vitamin C and the sperm levels in these patients and so on. And as the study goes on, these are all scientific investigations. I'm just trying to relay to them and understand that this is all in good science. And research being done in Brazil, and they're showing if you add the omega-3 oils and, of course, the vitamin E to certain diets, why then you increase the semen volume, its motility, that is, its swimming action, and its vigor in order to conceive and do its job. So what we have here is that they know this and they're practicing it in animal husbandry. So we see it where they're trying to get a bull to produce an offspring and so on, because these are precious animals. And so they're using all these methods, vitamins, minerals, essential oils, to make these animals more fertile, but we are having a massive effort to scare humans away from dietary supplements. And, of course, we have this codified way of doing it through the World Health Organization, where they're actually going to have this codex limit on the amount of vitamins and minerals in vitamin pills as a kind of a, quote, harmonization, and, of course, to avoid, quote, side effects. Of course, we can't find the side effects. We can't find the morbidity and the mortality. The investigation of poison control centers for the last number of years can't even find one death from a multivitamin, and that was the subject of this recent panel report here last week by the NIH, which was absolutely just made fools out of them. But, of course, our news media just parrots the press releases coming out from government with no contrary opinions being given. And, of course, this is exactly what you get, is the public scared away from perfectly safe things. But we're bringing this up today in the context of was all of this being orchestrated, whether it's the fluoride, whether it's reduced cholesterol, or in this case now to limit the amount of vitamins in our vitamin pills, and even without rules and laws to limit them, just scare you away from the higher doses. Is all this an effort just to, well, control the population size? One has to ask the question, and it's odd that no one's bringing it up. And, of course, public health authorities have to know these things just as much as the veterinarians know in the opposite direction, that when they're trying to build the production of flocks of chickens or herds of cattle or whatever it is that they're doing, they're using these various nutritional methods to increase fertility. Of course, you understand in the animal husbandry area, we need to produce billions of birds every year, chickens, turkeys, and so on, as a food supply. We need, of course, cattle the same way and so on. So the yield and the number of offspring and, of course, the number of successful pregnancies and so on, these all have to be optimized in order for them to supply food for the world. And that's exactly what these veterinarians are doing. And, of course, it's the exact opposite we see here in the human populations. And we find that odd because animals are an example for human reproduction. They are mammals. They are made in the same model as what God made us all in. And, of course, we see this actual contrary direction in human populations. It tells you that there is a massive covert effort to control the populations of the world, and they're doing it through controlling the accessibility and, of course, of vitamins and minerals and dietary supplements and foods. And then, of course, we're seeing this in the control of cholesterol, that everybody should reduce their cholesterol. This would be totally inappropriate for an 18-year-old or 24-year-old young lady, or the same for 20-year-old young males, and yet they're telling them to do this very same thing. They don't have heart attacks and cholesterol and heart disease, and yet we see this going on. And, of course, we're adding fluoride to the water supply all over the United States. And we just got to ask, what was this whole agenda about? We're still going and filling cavities. Children are still getting a dental decay. So what is? Are we that dumb to pull the wool over our eyes? I know these arguments appear in the news media, and where we go, we hear the fluoride argument here, and we hear it there. We hear both sides, so we get confused. But can't you see that the children still have the cavities? Can't you see that the adults are still having the heart attacks, regardless of the fluoride in the water or the cholesterol levels being controlled by the statin drugs or whatever? Can't you see it's ineffective? Why were they doing it in the first place? That has to bring us back to that question. And, of course, the fluoride, cholesterol, control of vitamins, this all seems to be an orchestrated effort. We do see fertility clinics, couples scratching their head and questioning why they can't have babies. We see marriages break up over these things. Women almost ready to commit suicide because they can't conceive a baby. I mean, all of these things. And we never used to have these problems in the past. You can go back 50 years. We wouldn't have had this kind of human heartache going on. And, of course, I just have to believe, what is the next effort they're going to come up with in order to covertly control the population sizes? We don't see it in the rest of the world where they're not controlling the fluoride, where they don't have a massive cholesterol reduction program, and so on. So we don't see that.
And, of course, there's no other country in the world that fluoridates all of its water, except in Ireland they do, or at least a good percentage of it. But here, one of the major thrusts of our public health services is water fluoridation. And if any of our listeners honestly believe water fluoridation is safe and effective, let me suggest you go to the website of the engineers and lawyers and scientists who work for the EPA. Now, these are the people you're never going to hear about, but their unions are able to speak out, and there's about 11 different unions made up of the people, the engineers, the lawyers, the scientists who work for the EPA. Their website is NTEU280.org. That's NTEU280.org. go to their website, pull down all the information on the website, read the information, specifically Dr. Hersey's speech, who will tell you how it affects the mind and the sperm count and all of these things. They know what's trying. They've tried to get this information out to the public, and because of the control over the medium, because of the control over the American Medical Association, because of the control of the ADA, the American Dental Association, you're not getting the truth. Either I'm lying or you're being lied to by the media and they're poisoning you and your children. Go to the website, NTEU280.org, the National Treasury Employees Union 280, but it's basically the EPA employees, and of course they're trying to tell the American people, but Rush Limbaugh is never going to tell you about that. So, Bill, I share your concern, and there's so many things that they're doing to lower the fertility of our people. Certainly aspartame has that effect, the NutraSweet, the mercury, which they're giving us in the vaccines, and in other sources will have that effect. Certainly, as you point out, the statins, cutting back on the availability of vitamins. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to ever stop and ask, why are so many men having all sorts of sexual dysfunction now? We never used to see this before. Oh, shucks, well, it's just happening. Don't ask stupid questions. Just take the pills that we give you, the little blue pill or whatever it be, and everything's going to be fine. And in the meantime, of course, they're destroying the fertility of our people.
We're just missing the great, big, obvious contradictions in our society. It doesn't matter where we are. Just on the political side, I mean, I get these emails here that a man named Chavez, I don't think he's any saint, he's in Venezuela, he's in control of an oil supply there, it's one of the major oil supplies in the world, and yet they're demonizing this man. Now, before we jump into doing this and saying we're going to boycott Citgo, which are all the Venezuelan connected gas stations in the United States, has some connection with Venezuela, if we understand what OPEC was, OPEC was because oil was so cheap and gasoline was so cheap and there was such a glut of oil that they were going to control this so that the oil wouldn't drop, the gasoline prices wouldn't drop so low. So they would conspire to keep the prices up, which of course would be restraint of trade. But this is what they did. This was just a few years ago. And now they're telling us there's a shortage of oil and that this guy down here in Venezuela who wants to break the, doesn't want to work with OPEC and supply the world with as much oil as they want, why, he's some sort of a communist. We've got to get rid of him. We've got to send the CIA down there and shoot him. Folks, are you buying this, or are you the one paying the $3.50 a gallon for the gasoline? Someone has pulled a fast one on somebody, and if the American public doesn't get it, OPEC had tons of oil in excess just a decade ago. What happened? So, you know, I don't care what level it is, the American public can't even see the obvious. Their outrage should have been, well, we don't see it. The American public should be outraged at this. They're being lied to grossly, and yet they can't do thinking for themselves. They're waiting for the news media to do the thinking for them, and this is where we're in trouble. So,
I agree with you totally. In fact, everybody thinks we went into Iraq to increase the oil supply since we went into Iraq and destabilized the country. They're blowing up the pipelines all the time, and Iraq is not putting out anywhere near as much oil as it was. And that is, of course, one of the reasons why the price of oil is so high. They've created artificial shortages. And, of course, I really don't think there's any shortages. I think that they're withholding this from the supply lines. Why? To drive the prices up. Is it only coincidence that our major oil companies, which are working so hard, you know, to get more oil, made $100 billion? They increased their profit margin four times this last year. From $25 billion to $100 billion? I mean, is that simply by coincidence?
But the American public is simply not understanding that when George Bush got in office, he gave a $400 billion tax cut, which was equivalent to the gasoline in price increase. Americans would need $400 million more to pay for the gasoline, and George Bush timely provided it to the oil companies by implementing a tax cut. Now, that means he's in league with the oil companies to make sure that all this happens and that they got their $400 billion. Let's just cut taxes, and then the oil companies can take the money folks, your government is complicit with the oil companies in creating this so-called oil shortage and all these other things that are going on. You've got to lead that all the way to all these phony wars and all this other stuff as well.
Well, of course, we always start our programs by saying reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I'd like to suggest that most of what you see and what you hear, and of course, what you're being told is simply lies. And it's about time people got starting to think and began to ask questions. Why are all of these things happening? Is it possible that the media all across America is controlled and there are only a few sources where you can really get the truth? You go to that website, NETEU280.org, or go to Bill Sardi's website, knowledgeofhealth.com. Well, Bill, let's get your website out one more time. I got so involved, I forgot to give you an opportunity to get that information out.
All right, it's knowledgeofhealth.com, knowledgeofhealth.com. We try not to wrap you up in political matters there because people are coming. They're desperate. They're like Eric Tanimoto and his mother's age 61 in, of course, Hawaii. She was a smoker, had lost her kidney to cancer. She had lung cancer. She was betwixt as to what to do. She underwent, of course, interferon treatment, which was terrible side effects. She could never go back to it, but it did buy her time. And, of course, her cancer subsided a bit. The tumor shrank, but not for long. The family, in desperation, went to search for alternative medicine, went on into buying Rife machines. These are electrical devices invented in the 1930s, and many other alternative medicine treatments, all of them inappropriate. The family was depleted of thousands and thousands of dollars trying to find alternative cancer treatments. And then, of course, we ran into Eric. Now, this had been about 2.5-3 years into his mother's diagnosis. And, of course, she had tumors in her lung. And, of course, it got so bad that the lung collapsed. She was really essentially not far from death. But ran into my website. They began using high doses of fish oil, IP6 rice bran extract, large doses of vitamin D, vitamin C, and, of course, resveratrol, the red wine pill. And, of course, within weeks, her lung had gone back up to 90% of its volume. It had healed. She was discharged from the hospital. And I am proud to say that this woman is completely free of cancer, as evidenced by the most recent X-ray, with astounding, they're holding their heads as the radiologist looked at this and cannot figure out what happened. Now, this is the kind of information we share on our website. It's free for everyone to see. And, of course, we're trying to give everyone the very basic information of how to stay healthy. Knowledgeofhealth.com. Sometimes we are humbled by some of these stories that make their way onto our pages. And, of course, we just share them with you as an encouragement for even the very desperate. But, of course, for many of you, you just have hypertension or other conditions. All we can do is give you the reports that we have. Most of them are free, and if you like to read books, you can buy a book there. But most of the information is absolutely without any obligation. You're not put on any list or anything. And, of course, you're given that information. We're trying to steer you away from the unsafe drugs. We come back to Radio Liberty here in a few days.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We're just going to have to go to a break here, and then we'll be right back with Bill Sardi. Well, Bill, go right ahead.
Well, I am saying that, of course, as you see this whole agenda unfold, and it's a sad one, it's very difficult for us to fathom that humanity is so inhumane. But some of this is really just comes to a clear conclusion as we see this whole story unfold of so many ways we can live longer and healthier, and the information is being kept from us. And, of course, it gets frustrating at my end to see some of these things because they're very clear as you study the scientific literature, but, of course, not as clear to the public as they hear me say this or you say it for the first time, and then, of course, they're looking for someone else to corroborate. Well, it won't be your doctor. He'll be totally confused by the misinformation as well. it will be very difficult for you to sort this out on your own. We try to give references. We try not to be sensationalistic, try not to be conspiratorial in everything we're talking about. We're just trying to get information to you as to how do you get out of this. How do you get out of this mess? How do you cure the cancers that you have? How do you stop the hypertension? How do you cure yourself of angina and chest pain and all these other things? What do you do when modern medicine lets you down? And there's so many cracks in modern medicine. We do have a little book, The Collapse of Conventional Medicine. You can download it and read it at my website. It's a free ebook.
Well, we're out of time, Bill, but let me just say, if you want to get more information, go to either AskBillSardi.com or KnowledgeOfHealth.com. Get the information that's there. Look at it, evaluate it, and remember it's all backed up by solid medical reports that your doctor really doesn't have time to read. I know because I practice medicine, and so much of this information I didn't know when I was practicing medicine. You need to get it. You need to get it to your doctor. There's a lot more that can be done to help people. Bill Sardi, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you today.
Bye-bye and God bless. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our program with Bill. And then, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We would appreciate your help. If you believe you're going to get information here that you're not going to get elsewhere, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Remember, I'm going to be talking this Saturday at the Conspiracy Conference over in the Santa Clara area. And that's I'm giving the first talk, so you're going to have to be there early if you want to hear me. It's from 8:30 to 10:15. If you'd like more information, the telephone number is 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or go to conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. The meeting is going to be at the Hyatt over there, the Hyatt Hotel. So get the information, and then, of course, we hope many of you will want to come. It should be a fascinating time. And then I certainly would want to mention we do carry a great deal of information on water fluoridation. We have many of the scientific studies on this that you're not going to get elsewhere. Our hidden agenda syllabus, and it goes along with the talk I gave on the history of water fluoridation. You get the two of it and you'll have all the scientific studies. Get them to your doctor. Let him understand that they're poisoning our children. They're decreasing the sperm count. They're actually lowering the testosterone levels. They're lowering the fertility rates. They're lowering the IQ. They're increasing the incidence of cancer. They're increasing the fragility of bones. They're suppressing the thyroid. They know what they're doing. And if you get the book we carry called The Fluoride Deception, you'll find that in Newburgh, New York, where they did the original studies on water fluoridation, they had twice the incidence of heart disease. That's right, twice the incidence of heart disease. Is that why we have so much more heart disease in the United States than they have over in Great Britain, in comparable groups of people, comparable groups of men? There's so much information you're not getting. Remember that website on water fluoridation, NTEU280.org? That's NTEU280.org. Go up to my website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, and you can pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph. You need to get my talk on planned population reduction, our video on population control, our four tape sets on population control. There really are evil people out there. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.